The Extraordinary Ordinary is brought to you in partnership with Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners. Hello and welcome to The Extraordinary Ordinary, the podcast from Women of the Year. It's a particularly extraordinary year for us at Women of the Year because it's our 70th anniversary. So in celebration, we're doing something a bit different in this series of the podcast. Every woman who's invited to the Women of the Year lunch is extraordinary in some way. And we've been lucky enough to talk to some of them in the previous three series of The Extraordinary Ordinary. But back in 2000, it was decided to give awards to a small number of standout women at each lunch in recognition of their exceptional achievements, courage, and or legacy, or indeed all three. Since then, we've honoured over 100 amazing women, including Tina Turner, Margaret Thatcher, P.D. James, and Marie Colvin. But it hasn't just been about the famous names. We've also given awards to many extraordinary, ordinary women who've shown remarkable determination, bravery, tenacity, and courage, often in the most difficult and dangerous of situations. I'm Diane Kenwood, journalist, broadcaster, and a director of Women of the Year. And in this anniversary series, I'll be talking to some of those amazing past award winners to share why they were honoured, what it meant to them at the time, and to find out how life has been for them since becoming a Woman of the Year award winner. Our final guest on this series of The Extraordinary Ordinary is also the most recent and one of our youngest ever award winners. Fahma Mohammed was just 17 when she was given the Young Campaigner of the Year award in 2014 in recognition of her remarkable campaigning against the practice of FGM, which saw her spearheading a petition calling for it to be banned. That collected over 240,000 signatures and garnered the support of Malala Yousafzai and then UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Fahma's campaign resulted in compulsory training for public sector workers so that teachers, doctors and social workers can identify and help girls at risk. 2 years after receiving our award, Fahma became one of the youngest people in the UK to be given an honorary degree when she was awarded a Doctorate of Law by Bristol University in recognition of her activism. As dedicated as she always has been to tackling gender and racial inequality, Fahma works at Integrate UK, a youth-led charity in her hometown of Bristol, which helps young people to work towards gender and racial equality, integration and community cohesion in a very particular way. We'll find out what that is, but first, Fahma, welcome to The Extraordinary Ordinary. It's so lovely to see you.
Thank you so much for inviting me. That was very lovely. Those kind words just like really touched me.
I should say actually at this point that when Fahma came to the lunch, I was the host on her table. So we sat together.
Yeah, the whole time, which was great. I remember like snippets of that day, but definitely appreciated the fact that you made me feel kind of so comfortable, especially because I felt so out of my element that day. And I'm just super honoured to be here, to be honest.
Well, it's lovely to celebrate you again. And actually, I mean, when I look back now, you were 17 and the Women of the Year lunch, we do absolutely everything in our power to make sure it's as warm and welcoming and, you know, that everyone feels as comfortable as possible. But that's quite a big deal for you as a 17-year-old to go into a room full of 400 women, not knowing anyone. It must have been fairly overwhelming.
Yeah, definitely. I don't understand how I wasn't more freaked out by it back then. I think I just had that inner confidence that comes with a lot of teenagers where you're just like, yeah, I can rule the world. It doesn't matter kind of mindset.
Let's explore that mindset a bit, because I should also say that you were 17 when you got the award, but that was following 3 years of campaigning at a level that, you know, as we've just said, involved eventually a Nobel Peace Prize winner and the General Secretary of the UN. Tell us, first of all, what fired you? What sparked your interest and horror at the practice of FGM?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like you said, so I think the heavy campaigning definitely started around when I was like 13, 14. But it was really when I was 11 that I actually thought I want to get involved and join the charity as like a young person. How it all came about, Lisa, who is the co-founder of Integrate, she was my English teacher in year seven. And it was through her that I kept hearing the term FGM, FGM, FGM a lot. And as someone that comes from an affected community, again, I did not know that I came from an affected community. So that also was interesting to find out. clearly it's something that obviously my community has been practicing, very well aware of, but it was so taboo that even amongst ourselves, we weren't allowed to talk about it. Therefore, you know, young people like me at that age had no idea that this practice even existed. And I'm sure most girls didn't know that that practice existed until, unfortunately, they found themselves in a circumstance where it was happening to them. You know, I took that home, had a very frank conversation with my mother.
And was she open about discussing it with you? Was she happy to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I would have been so spurred on and found that inner confidence to actually want to do something about it if it wasn't for that conversation that I had with my mother. One thing that I've always appreciated when it comes to my mother, there was no wrong questions. And she very much kind of gave me that space to kind of explore my thoughts and opinions and have really great, insightful conversations with me at a young age where I felt like, you know, I wasn't scared to express myself. And I think that I carried that on, obviously, throughout the campaign, and is a very important part of who I am as a person today as well.
Did she or either of your parents have any reservations about you campaigning? Because it's one thing to have those private conversations in the, you know, the security of your own home environment. And obviously you come from a very open and inclusive family, so you're able to do that. But I'm guessing that your views were not necessarily entirely popular with everybody.
Definitely not. Not amongst our communities. Specifically the men. The men had quite a few issues about women and girls speaking on an issue that primarily affects us and our bodies, which is interesting. But yes, no, there definitely was, I think, a little bit of a reservation on my mother's side, which looking back only makes sense. I'd have the exact same reservations. And the fact that even through those reservations and throughout the years, having those sit-down conversations with her, she still didn't suppress me or my character and wasn't trying to kind of change my beliefs in order to kind of fit everyone else's opinion within our community. You know, I have a lot of respect for her looking back on it now. But yeah, there definitely was.
So it's one thing to hear about this. I mean, it is, you know, nobody who truly understands what FGM involves could be anything other than horrified about it, you would think. It's one thing to hear that, be horrified by it as a young person. It's entirely another to decide that you want to actually do something about it and go about that. How on earth did you go about that?
Yeah, there were so many, like, emotions that kind of came over me when I had that conversation with my mom and since then. And I just remember feeling horrified. I felt stupid that I didn't know about this. As also, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'm one of 10. I'm the oldest and there's 9 girls and the youngest is a boy. You know, you can't help but not also think about your siblings, in like my sisters in that situation, and just being so thankful that my mom didn't care about fitting within the norm and the society and, you know, making us undergo such a horrible practice. But yeah, I definitely had all those thoughts kind of like whirling in my brain at once. And I was just like, I just remember feeling if I didn't at least use my voice as a young, you know, Somali girl within the community, I'd be doing a huge disservice to other girls who are in the exact same position as me. At 11, obviously, you don't have that much power or control, but I recognize the little privilege that I had and power and influence as a young Somali girl that was brought up in the Western world. You know, I was born in the Netherlands and then moved there when I was 7. You know, my upbringing is very different to those that grew up back home in Somalia, very different to, you know, how my mom grew up and her stories and how crazy of a childhood that she had, and obviously a lot of trauma that she overcame through just her own life as well. Like, I recognized how lucky I was to be in the position that I was in. And I just remember thinking, like, if I don't do something about it, it's such a waste.
It's still, to me, it's remarkable that someone as young as you could have gone through that thought process. But I'm intrigued to know how you actually went about making your voice heard, because, you know, most 11-year-olds, you live in a fairly tight social circle and life experience circle. And if you want to raise your voice against something which, as you say, is, you know, prevalent in your own community, you know that you're going to have to take on those entrenched views. How you actually have any idea what to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Integrate was definitely the start, I would say, of just my activism journey. And it's kind of where I found my voice and the first platform that I kind of used to be able to express the views and opinions that I have and the change that I think the UK in general needs to make when it comes to FGM.
Perhaps this might be a moment, actually, because we will definitely come back to this, to explain exactly how Integrate work, who they are and what they do. Because the way that the organisation works is really, I think, very unusual. So can you explain that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way that the charity formed happened very organically through just trying to raise awareness. That's really the only goal that we had. It wasn't to bring about national change or change the education curriculum or target big politicians, policymakers. It was just get people within our community talking about it. So doing local projects to kind of raise awareness about the topic. Initially started off with just a bunch of young girls writing poetry about FGM in general, how it made them feel, how they felt as young Black girls having to live in a society where something like this was happening, and kind of just voice those feelings and emotions, kind of get it out there. So that's how it initially started. And then we did a play which covered quite a few topics, not just FGM, but other things that were happening within our community, and invited a lot of members from the community to come and join that. We did a lot of workshops where we invited people to just kind of like raise awareness. All of this was kind of happening after school. I'd go to all my lessons, and then pretty much from 3, when my school day would be done, till, I mean, it depends on the day, 4, 5, 6 p.m., maybe 7, I'd be with Lisa in her classroom and the rest of the young people. And we'd be having chats, we'd make plans. We would think about ways that we could just try ways awareness. So we just tried anything and everything, to be honest.
Yeah, so that was the seed that formed the essence of the way Integrate works, because what the organisation does is that it supports young people identifying issues that affect them, but then empowers them to become the solution to the problem through creative and educational works.
Exactly, yeah.
And helping everyone you're involved with to become the solution through the activities that you support them doing and that you were doing at the time.
Yeah. And the organization now obviously has grown to not just tackle just FGM, you know, now it's kind of like any kind of racial inequality or gender inequality that young people are facing currently that they feel, you know, no one is doing anything about or talking about enough. So covered things like grooming, honor-based abuse, sexual harassment and assault, so on. But for me, I found that definitely my power lies, especially as the young girls that are being affected by FGM look exactly like me, using my voice to primarily raise awareness about that and tackle that issue by bringing about a change within that sphere. It's very much, and I think this is what a lot of people don't realise, it's not an isolated issue. It's not something that happens to young Black and brown girls abroad and doesn't affect us whatsoever. It falls under the realm of sexual violence. It is child abuse, whether people want to recognise it or not. It's a human rights issue. It falls under all these, you know, huge umbrellas. And so I think by using my voice and through the conversations that I was having about this issue, about FGM with other people and linking it back to those other issues, I found it was a great way to make people understand how horrific of an issue that it is and get them to be able to empathize with the young girls that are at risk of having it done or have had to go through it.
It's an absolutely astonishing thing that someone of your young age managed to achieve what you did. And I wonder how it felt, because obviously you're sitting in your, again, your smallish world in your classroom with your amazing sounding teacher and plotting and planning and trying to come up with ways of getting your message across. And then you do. I mean, you really, really do in the most astonishing way. And I wonder how that felt at the time, because however much you might have hoped and dreamed you could achieve something that would have some impact, when you do, and you are still so relatively young yourself, I'm intrigued how that felt.
Yeah, I'll give some context as well in terms of like how that happened. So like you said, it was just quite a few years of just working on like local projects, very much grassroots, primarily just working with our community in order to kind of break the stigma of just having this conversation. Like, there's nothing wrong with having this conversation. There's nothing wrong with young girls wanting autonomy over their own body and their rights. And through that, we started to get some traction, becoming a bit more well-known in Bristol. And I'm not sure how the Guardian heard of us, but yeah, they kind of reached out to us and had a meeting. And this is now obviously a couple of years on being involved with the charity and finding my voice. I think this great opportunity came about that when the Guardian reached out to us and heard about the great work that we were doing and wanting to amplify that by using, you know, their network and their power and their influence, I was there for that meeting. And yeah, I kind of just found this confidence where I just started kind of speaking for myself as a young person, hearing more about them in terms of like what their intentions were, coming up with the idea of this campaign together. And I think it was through that meeting where we kind of all looked at each other and was like, as a young person, as someone that comes from an affected community, it probably makes the most sense that this come from you. Would you want to be the face of this campaign? And if you'd asked me a couple of years before that, I would have said, absolutely not. If I hadn't started so locally and did all the grassroots work, I wouldn't have found the confidence to, in that moment, to say like, absolutely.
Yeah. So although you exploded into the public's consciousness, you actually had been doing the work behind the scenes. So it felt like more of a progression than something that suddenly was just like a rocket out of the blue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It felt like I'd been talking about FGM for a very long time. So yeah, like you said, it felt very natural. And I think probably looking back on it, that probably helped in terms of like when a lot of people ask me, how weren't you freaked out when all of this happened at the time and when you were getting all the attention and press? And for me, I was like, well, I've been campaigning about this issue for a very long time. So even though all this attention that I'm getting now, it is very much new to me and it's great, but it felt like a natural progression for me. And I think that's why I was able to handle it so well.
Certainly on the evidence of how you were at the Women of the Year lunch that day, you did handle it absolutely brilliantly. And your quiet confidence and your passion about your messaging, I can still remember now how it absolutely filled the room. And I know you got a fantastic reception at the lunch. What did that mean to you at the time?
It meant the world to me, because I think that was really the first award that I got that recognised the campaign and the work that I was doing. The fact that my name was even a part of that conversation and, you know, young campaigner. And I know that my circumstance like wasn't dissimilar in terms of like, I wasn't the only young person that felt passionate about an issue that resonated with them and were campaigning and doing great work, either locally within their community or nationally as well. There are so many amazing young people that are putting in the work. So to be recognised, that honestly was such a huge honour for me. My mum was so happy and excited for me. And yeah, I just remember kind of being in shock, to be honest. I don't think it really fully hit me until I was there present in that moment, because it was a lot.
Yeah, it certainly was. It's clear you're still, well, you now work with Integrate. So, you know, you have absolutely stayed true to your campaigning path. Do you ever get disheartened?
Campaigning, it resonates so much to me. And it's just a huge part of who I am as a person. I don't see myself not ever not doing that in some way or form, which is why I think I've tried to make that my career. Because if I can bring that into my future roles and my future jobs and use that to bring about more change and more influence that way, then I will absolutely do that as much as I can.
Well, there'll be a lot of people I know who'll be very grateful that you are determined to continue doing the amazing work that you've done and that we recognised you for with your award at Women of the Year. Honestly, Fahmah, it's been such a treat to catch up with you again and to have this conversation that I think anyone who listens to will very much understand why we chose you as our award winner then. Before I let you go, though, I do want to ask you the four quickfire questions that we ask all our guests on the podcast. So I'll kick off with the first one, which is, who is or are the woman or women who've inspired you in your life?
I mean, I've obviously mentioned her before, but I would say it was my mum. It's probably easier now, but especially like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there really wasn't anyone that I could aspire to that looked like me, that I considered to be a great role model for me. But my mum absolutely was that person. Her values that she's instilled in me, I take that with me everywhere that I go. And I recognise how difficult of a position she was in at the time to allow me to be so outspoken and not care about the backlash that I was getting and speaking about such not only sensitive topics, but, you know, quite vulgar as well. So, yeah, my mum.
You're a great credit to her.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. I'll pass that on to her. She'll love that.
Okay, question number two. What would your advice? I was going to say, what would your advice be to your younger self? I mean, most of my guests, there's quite a gap in age between the age they are now and their younger selves. I would say there's not so much with you, but what, when you look back now at that young girl starting off on her campaigning, what would your advice be to her?
Yeah, it might not seem there was a big of a gap, but I definitely did feel lost, I think, for a time, especially in my early 20s when, you know, campaigning's all I know. All of this I'm doing outside of my schooling. Initially at the time, I was pursuing to go to university to study science. I think it took quite a few years for me to realise what it is that I wanted to do with my life and where I found joy and happiness. And yeah, like I said, for me, it's never been really about the fame or the money. As long as I feel like I'm making a difference, that's all that matters.
So what would you have said to young Fahmah then?
Recognize that earlier, basically, and not to feel pressured because of people in your life at the time, whether that be family members or teachers. Just stick to what you've been doing all along.
Yeah, you're very good at it.
And you can definitely make a career out of it. I did not know that at the time when I was 14.
And presumably, none of those people who were advising you knew it either. So, you know, their advice was coming from a place of, you know, care and compassion.
Of course, yeah.
They look and see you might want to have a career in campaigning. You'd think, well, what does that look like then?
Exactly.
That's gorgeous advice. Question number three, what's one thing you can't live without?
The simple answer will probably just be my family. I can't live without my family, especially being the oldest in my family. I feel, obviously, huge responsibility for them. I'm constantly thinking about their well-being, how they're feeling. They're always at the forefront of my mind, which most eldest girl can relate to that feeling.
Yep, I'm the oldest girl of four, and we're three girls and a boy, so we're not quite as many girls as you, but I absolutely can identify with that very well.
Yeah, and I don't know what I would do without them.
Gorgeous. Last question then. What's something about you that would surprise people to know?
Again, this is going to sound crazy, especially when people hear about my history and all the stuff that like I've been able to do. I consider myself quite a boring person, especially the people that I'm meeting for the first time, more friends, are hearing about kind of like all my activism work and journey. When they hear that for the first time, they are so shocked. They can't believe it. You know, they start asking me a lot of questions about what that was like and who I got to meet and stuff like that. And I think with them, sometimes it's hard to reconciliate the two of like the person that they know, just that they hang out with on a day-to-day basis. And then this kind of like double life. I don't know if you know like Hannah Montana.
Yeah, I do.
Just like she's a regular girl in her day-to-day life, but she's really this pop star. Not that I think I'm on that level, not at all. But it just in terms of like, they're like, that's wild to know that about you. So maybe the fact that I'm just chill, that I love to read, hang out with my friends. I'm a huge homebody. I'm not that exciting, even though my life sounds exciting.
Well, I honestly think your life sounds remarkable. You are Very remarkable indeed. And it has been, as I said, an absolute joy to catch up with you and to hear what you've been up to since we met at Women of the Year those 10 years ago. And I wish you the very best of luck with everything. And thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us today on The Extraordinary Ordinary.
Thank you for even thinking of me. I appreciate all your kind words, and this has been amazing.
We've loved sharing the memories with you. Thank you. The Extraordinary Ordinary is brought to you in partnership with Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners. CCEP is the world's largest independent bottler. In Great Britain, they make, move and sell soft drinks for every occasion and employ some 3,600 people across England, Scotland and Wales at manufacturing sites, offices and depots. At CCEP, their everyone's welcome philosophy means they're creating a modern company where everyone can grow, develop and belong. They make a positive difference in both their workplaces and their local communities, which is something they're extremely passionate about at CCEP. If you've enjoyed this episode of The Extraordinary Ordinary, which of course we really hope you have, please rate and review us. It helps people to find us. Thank you.